Attempt blocked by McNabb to the right circle. A try. Kick save Hill. Rebound. Another try. Save Hill. A third try. Save. And the rebound to the right corner.
Nobody is ever satisfied with one. So we're back for a second hour of the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show.
Blob boots it ahead. Sticks it left. Barbashev in. Back to the right. A shot. Score! Marchessault. 19 seconds in.
From the Finley Chevrolet Fox Sports Las Vegas studio and live at LVSportsNetwork.com, here is Darren Millard and Ryan Wallace.
Hour number two of the VGK Insider Show rolling along here on a Thursday. The VGK Insider Show is brought to you by the Dollar Loan Center, where your first loan is on us. Apply for free at don'tbebroke.com to get up to $5,000. Going to touch on a little bit more detail on the Noah Hanifin trade, what it means for the Golden Knights moving forward. I'm sorry, not the trade, the extension for Noah Hanifin. We've got one-timers, clinching scenarios. I know everyone's favorite aspect of one-timers this time of year is we get to talk about which teams can punch their ticket to the playoffs or win their subsequent division. So we'll get into that in just a little bit as well. Plus, we've got two pairs of tickets to see the Golden Knights and the Colorado Avalanche this coming Sunday. So be listening in for your chance to win one of those pairs in just a little while. But as we do when we break down games, we're going to get into Vegas Edmonton last night. And you know, we touched on it in passing in hour number one with Darren Millard. We'll dig a little bit deeper right now as the Golden Knights drop the game last night in Edmonton 5-1 to the Oilers. And in looking at the game and trying to understand the game from the Golden Knights' perspective, urgency offensively, it just wasn't there. Like, there was not sustained offensive zone time for the Golden Knights. They weren't able to wear down the Edmonton Oilers physically, and in part and parcel with that was the fact that they never really got their forecheck going, which has been a big factor for the Golden Knights in how they match up against the Edmonton Oilers. 5-on-5, the Oilers were better than Vegas last night. Now, every other facet of the game, they were better than Vegas too. But when you look at things on the whole, last night against the Edmonton Oilers, it just wasn't a solid game from Vegas. They just didn't have it. Now, as we talked about earlier on with Darren, could it be final game out of a stretch of 8 games where you're playing 8 games in 8 different cities? Maybe that has something to do with it. But at the end of the day, it was an opportunity for the Golden Knights to kind of get their game going in the right direction again, and it just didn't really happen. So from that perspective, I think we can get into game ratings unless you have something else to say on it, Chapman.
No, let's just do the game ratings and get it out of the way.
All right, so let's get into the game ratings.
To alcohol, the cause of and solution to all of life's problems.
Where are you going, buddy?
Well, Ryan, it is, I think, the absolute worst of the worst. Everything that could have gone bad last night was bad, and a lot of it was the Golden Knights' own doing. Look, they were skated off the ice last night by a Connor McDavid-less Edmonton Oilers team. The only thing worse than a fireball shot is a full bottle of fireball, and that's what this is. It's about as worst of a game, or the worst performance I've seen from this team in a long, 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 long time. And there have been some stinkers this season, but this was, I think this was, given what was at stake, given who you were playing, given who was not playing for the other team, to come out and get your doors blown off by that team in a game of this magnitude at this point of the season, There's a lot of adjectives I could use to describe it, but I won't, because I like my job. So I will just leave it sort as of. It's a one. It's a fireball. It's horrible.
Was horrible. Like, okay. I'm going to go with a fireball as well. It's a 1 out of 5 for me. Again, there wasn't offensive urgency. There really wasn't a lot of extended zone time for the Golden Knights offensively. I thought that they had trouble breaking pucks out all night long, and I don't even know that it was I don't even know that it was because of pressure from the Edmonton Oilers forecheck. I just think the Golden Knights didn't manage the puck very well, right? Like, there were plenty of opportunities for Vegas to kind of simplify the game, and as we hear from Bruce Cassidy so often, to get pucks in deep and play from behind, right? Play below the Edmonton Oilers, and it just didn't ever really happen. It didn't materialize. And then, you know, to kind of make matters worse, Golden Knights are going through a bit of puck luck here, right? It's not going their way. They had a goal, the game winner actually in Vancouver, deflect off of Nick Hague and fall right to Connor Garland. They had the first goal of the game go directly off of Alec Martinez and in. It was a nothing play. It really wasn't dangerous. There was no one from the Edmonton Oilers in front of the crease at all. It's just an unfortunate bounce that goes against Vegas. And, you know, in thinking about the question from Darren earlier, how would I assess that eight-game stretch for the Golden Knights where they were able to take points, go 3-0-1 on that four-game road trip, followed up with a big win against the Vancouver Canucks, and then have things, you know, fall apart in Arizona and then back again in Vancouver and certainly last night in Edmonton. And I think what you saw from Vegas was somewhat reminiscent of the stretch prior to that run, where it almost felt like they were waiting for something bad to happen, and then everything snowballed from there, right? Like, you think back to the game in Boston, you think back to some of those other road games where the Golden Knights seemingly had control, they were up, they had leads, and things crumbled because of a goal against that led to two, led to three, led to four. And I just think that, you know, when we look at Vegas, what they did so well in the stretch where they were winning is they didn't let things snowball. They were able to recompose themselves inside of the game and get that next goal, get themselves back on track. They were able to find ways to win. And at times this season, they've had moments where they've kind of found ways to lose. And I think that more than anything, that was Arizona. And it bled into, at times, the game against Vancouver and then certainly last night in Edmonton.
Yeah, I mean, I just feel like there wasn't any urgency. Yeah. In their game last night. And I know Bruce Cassidy talked in the postgame about some miscommunication, I guess, between the goalie and, you know, it led to a couple of goals. I guess, you know, with Aiden not playing as much as he would like to have been lately, mm-hmm. maybe that's acceptable for one goal. I would have thought it's the kind of thing that would have gotten worked out after that first goal. To allow three goals where there was this miscommunication, I just – that's bad. Like – I mean,
well,
and look, I know there's a timing issue, and look, if you want to find something positive, and the only positive is the Golden Knights scored a shorthanded goal,
mm-hmm.
and Noah Hanifin assisted on that shorthanded goal, and it was a great pass,
it was a great play,
and it was, and look, and full marks to Keegan Kolesar because it was a great goal. I just needed more of that. Like, to me, it's good that you scored that goal, but when you're down 4-0 at that point.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of meaningless. Well, it was meaningless.
Well, okay. So let's think about it from this perspective. Did you learn anything about the Edmonton Oilers coming out of that game? Like, has your opinion changed or swayed in any direction when it comes to Edmonton as they get closer and closer to the playoffs? Because as you mentioned, they played last night without Connor McDavid. And they weren't hyper dangerous offensively. Like, obviously they executed, they finished the chances that they had, but, you know, realistically, you look at two of those goals shouldn't have gone in. One, the deflection off of Alec Martinez, that shouldn't go in. And then the final goal for Dylan Holloway, if you've got the communication dialed in between your goaltender and your defenseman, that puck doesn't get anywhere close to going in. So, you know, really you look at a goal on the power play, a great play by Zach Hyman down low. But it wasn't as if the Oilers overwhelmed the Golden Knights offensively. I just think that defensively there was a concerted effort from Edmonton to not allow Vegas transition offense. And it worked really well. They did not feed offensive chances to the Golden Knights. And that, to me, was a big difference in how the Oilers played.
Well, what I found is I don't think they were intimidated by the Golden Knights at 5-on-5.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they outplayed Vegas in every aspect of the game, including the 5-on-5 situation. So that was an area where Vegas had a very distinct advantage, I thought, going into last night. Now,
had it in the playoffs last year.
Yeah, well, and that's it. It's one game. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily believe after one good performance by Edmonton and one bad performance by Vegas that it sways my opinion that much. I need to see more of a consistent pattern of it before I'll concede that they're better at 5-on-5. I mean, look, the reality is if these two teams play in the playoffs, the team that's better at 5-on-5 hockey is going to be the one that advances. And for Edmonton, I think they gained a lot of confidence in that situation last night. Whether it carries over, I don't know. But at least for last night, the Edmonton Oilers were a lot better than Vegas in some areas, and they were better than they generally tend to be than Vegas in some areas. So, look, I guess we'll just have to see if these two teams meet again, if what each of them learned from last night. If I'm Vegas, there's probably not a whole lot I learned about my game last night. But for Edmonton, maybe it gives them a confidence boost heading into to their game with Vancouver coming up this weekend.
So that sets up the final games of the regular season for the Golden Knights. They've got four left on the ledger. You've got Minnesota, Colorado, and then you've got Chicago and Anaheim. That's the remaining slate for Vegas, all at home. So they have an opportunity to stay in one spot for a while. That's not been the case over the last week and a half, 2 weeks or so. Vegas did have a home game, but it was eight different games in eight different cities over the course of just about 12 to 13 days, 14 days, somewhere in there. So with that being said, there's a lot of travel. There's a lot of games in a compacted amount of time. Do you believe that now the ability to be home for a little bit, the ability to dial things in against a Minnesota team that is eliminated from the playoffs, but they're not going to quit in any situation, and the expectation is tomorrow that Marc-Andre Fleury is going to go for Minnesota, then you've got Colorado, who's maybe not going to have a say in whether or not they'll win the division. Dallas might be able to wrap that up today, but it's still a Colorado team that kind of wants to make a statement and prove something in a matchup against Vegas. And then you've got Chicago in Anaheim. Do you feel like this stretch, these four games, provide enough of a runway or an opportunity for the Golden Knights to kind of dial things back in to where they were at the start of that eight-game stretch?
Well, look, if the way I look at tomorrow night's game, and I don't have any inside information, obviously, but it might be the last time you ever get to watch Marc-Andre Fleury play at T-Mobile Arena. So, okay. I mean, I'm just putting it out there.
It's fair. I mean, that's true.
We don't know what his future is, and we don't know where he's going to be next year. But you know, he is a free agent, so there is that possibility. He may, who knows? So that's one aspect. But the Golden Knights ruined the Minnesota Wild's season 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. The Minnesota Wild would certainly love to come in here and return the favor, and maybe not ruin the season for the Golden Knights, but put a just a little bit of doubt in their minds that they are going to be a playoff team. The reality of this situation, Ryan, is you've got two teams coming in here next week that haven't had a whole lot to play for basically since before Christmas. Mm-hmm. If you don't get your games right against those two teams, you probably don't deserve to be, like, if you don't beat those teams, you probably don't deserve to be in the playoffs anyway.
Sure.
The Colorado game is interesting to me because I think Colorado is I mean, they're going to be playing angry because I think they're going to feel like they maybe let the division get away. They were playing really good a few weeks ago, and then they had some slip ups, but it coincided with Dallas turning it on. So I'm sure they're not going to be happy about the fact that they're going to be the second team coming out of the Central. I'm sure they're not happy about the fact that they're going to have to play the Winnipeg Jets instead of probably the Nashville Predators or LA Kings or Golden Knights. So I guess what I'm saying is this is a really interesting homestand for so many reasons, because if you're Vegas, you've got to find a way to get it right. Like you don't I'm not a big believer in teams that back into the playoffs don't deserve to make the playoffs, but I think there is this sometimes mindset that if you back into the playoffs, you're not playing good, and generally that holds true. I think if you're Vegas, you're going to have, no matter what happens, you're going to be playing a really good team in the first round of the playoffs. And so, I don't think you want to be playing bad hockey going into that first series.
So here's the thing when it comes to Colorado, and just kind of piggybacking off of your point. they do not have home ice advantage locked up in that series against the Winnipeg Jets. Colorado's got 104 points, Winnipeg 102, and Winnipeg's got a game in hand. So obviously, tonight's game between Dallas and Winnipeg should inform whether or not Winnipeg has a chance to get home ice. But the game on Sunday might mean a heck of a lot to Colorado. It really might. Depending on how things go with Winnipeg-Dallas tonight, that game could be incredibly important for the Colorado Avalanche. So with that being said, I believe Colorado, to a certain degree, Edmonton, Dallas, the teams that have been at the top of the Western Conference usually pull something special out of the Golden Knights, right? When we talk about some of the best games of the year for Vegas, we're thinking about when they went to Dallas and absolutely skated the Stars out of the building. We talk about the 7-0 victory over the Colorado Avalanche from earlier on in the year. You go back and think about some of the best performances from the Golden Knights, it has usually been against the teams that have been right at the top that everybody looks at and views as contenders. I know that a lot of people are going to sit there and say, okay, well, the schedule for the Golden Knights coming up, it's tough in Minnesota, and it's certainly a hard ask against Colorado, but I feel like more so than Chicago and Anaheim, the game against Colorado is where I feel like the Golden Knights are going to get their groove back, because the Avalanche bring that out of the Golden Knights just as much as the Golden Knights bring that out of Colorado.
Yeah, these teams play great games against each other. Yeah. And the Golden Knights, I don't think Colorado's forgotten about that 7-0 drubbing that they received at the hands of the Golden Knights. And look, Colorado, I just think you look at the history of these two teams. Mm-hmm. Colorado, much like Minnesota, would love nothing more than to play a role in the Golden Knights missing the playoffs, because I'm sure Colorado, in the back of their mind, maybe it's not the most important thing that they're focused on, and maybe it's, but I'm sure it's in their mind, hey, you know what? If we can knock these guys out of the playoffs, it prevents us from having to potentially have to go through them to get back to a Stanley Cup final. And so I think you're going to get a good effort out of the Colorado Avalanche on Sunday. And look, I think for Vegas, I think that's the game, like you mentioned. I think that's a game where if you're Vegas, you have to play a good game. You have to go out there and play maybe your best game of the season. If not that, certainly one of them. Because Colorado, they're trying to get things right. And I think Colorado is a real threat to win the Stanley Cup. So if you're going to get it right, I think no better team to get it right against than them. But you've got to start tomorrow. You have to start this tomorrow.
Yeah.
You cannot come out and play a game devoid of urgency like you did last night. You have 4 home games. First of all, you owe it to your fans who've been here all season to go out and play well in these last 4 games. But you owe it to yourselves as well. This team's been through a lot of adversity this year. They're still dealing with it. But you have to look at every guy in that locker room and say, you know what? I'm going to go out there and play my ass off for this guy. I'm going to go out there and play my ass off for this guy trying to get 43 goals, 44 goals. I'm going to go out there and play well for my goalies. I'm going to go out and play well for everybody associated with the organization, because I feel like there's just been way too much inconsistency the last month and a half, and maybe even longer than that. Like the problem I have, Ryan, is I just don't know what team's going to show up. Is it going to be the team we saw smoke Vancouver 2 weeks ago, or is it going to be the team that went out last night and didn't even really play a great game?
Well, that's why I think the way the schedule sorts itself out here is maybe a positive for the Golden Knights. And here's my reasoning. You never get a free lunch game against the Minnesota Wild. You just don't, right? Like, even though Minnesota's not a playoff team, they play the Golden Knights incredibly hard. I don't know if it's just a matchup situation. I'm not really sure. It's hard to explain at times, but the fact of the matter is the Minnesota Wild always play the Golden Knights tough. So in order for Vegas to get their game back in order, it starts with a really strong performance against a team that isn't going to give you anything for free in Minnesota. Then you have the heavyweight matchup between Vegas and Colorado. It's a primetime game. You're going to have the multiverses going on the simulcast. Like, there's a lot of attention, eyeballs, whatever you want to say. It's all there. With Vegas, Colorado on Sunday. If the Golden Knights can get themselves into a position where they have, as you mentioned, their best game of the year, or they get close to it, or they're remotely the same team that played Vancouver a couple of weeks ago on home ice and had that great first period, those strong responses, those great answers. They were forechecking well. They were physical in every aspect. If you have that going against Colorado, then you look at the final two games of the year, Chicago, Anaheim, then it's time to show no mercy, right? Then it's time, if you're Vegas, where you simply put the pedal to the floor and you handle those teams the way that you expect to in order to get into the playoffs feeling good about your game. I know it's a short runway. I know it's only four games. I know there's been inconsistency all season long, but for a team that is trying to find the right combination, the right formula, work guys in, but also reach that next level in understanding that you can't kind of ease into this, right? You've got to get the level up a little bit higher. I think the way the schedule breaks down for Vegas, if they take advantage of it, if they play the way they should and they're supposed to, it can really put them into a good spot come playoff time if they respond the way that I'm expecting them to, and that is to find their game against Minnesota, have it really come to fruition, and pulled out of them in a way against Colorado, and then you got to steamroll Chicago and Anaheim. You have to put the pedal to the floor and show no mercy in those games.
Yeah, you've got to be ruthless against those teams. Chicago came in here back in, I think it was on Nevada Day, and we were, you know, we got to see Connor Bedard, and we got to see him score a goal, and the Blackhawks beat the Golden Knights. I was in Anaheim 2 days after Christmas when the Ducks embarrassed the Golden Knights. It was a game like last night, just lack of urgency. And I'm sitting there scratching my head like, this isn't supposed to happen against the Anaheim Ducks. You have to go out there and punish them just for being in the way. Like, that's, but I think
that's exactly what it is. You're right on the money. That's what you need to do in order to get yourself to a position where you feel good going into the playoffs. And listen,
it's nothing personal, but you're in my way. And I'm not saying punish you for being in my way.
I'm not saying that it's flipping a switch or anything like that. Like, listen, regardless of how the Golden Knights get into the postseason, one, I believe they're going to. The math hasn't changed in that regard. Like, I saw a lot of, oh my goodness, they're going to need to win three out of their next four. They're not. They still need the same amount of points as they needed yesterday.
Yeah, you need three points,
right? It's as simple and as easy as a win for Vegas and a loss for St. Louis. That gets you there. Frankly, that gets you there. Now, that being said, I still believe that even if they don't look as good as you'd like them to over the final four games, come playoff time, I believe the level of execution, I believe the level of urgency is going to go up because they're competitors. We know what they can do in those moments. I just believe it will. However, I do think you want to use these four games as a launching pad, as a running start, if you will, specifically Chicago and Anaheim. Because if you can find it in the next two games and you can roll into Chicago and Anaheim and you can make it hurt them, then all of a sudden, you're feeling really, really good about where your game is at. If you can execute at a high level, if you can defend at a high level, if you can get wins for Aiden and Logan in those two games, get them feeling good and confident about where their game is, I just think that this provides a perfect springboard for the Golden Knights to find their game, capture their game, and get themselves into the right headspace going into the postseason if they take advantage of it. And that's what I'm hoping to see from them over the final four.
Yeah, I don't think fans should panic. I mean, listen, you're still in the very favorable position of only needing 3 points in your next four games. Yeah. And it doesn't matter how that happens. St. Louis loses, and you go to overtime. You're in the playoffs. Like, it's that simple.
Now, here's the interesting thing, because you bring up St. Louis. St. Louis, 3 points back of the Vegas Golden Knights, only three games remaining for the St. Louis Blues. They've got Carolina, Seattle, and Dallas, okay? There's no easy games in terms of Carolina and Dallas, and like I recognize the Dallas Stars might not have anything to play for, but they might have everything to play for, depending on how the next couple of games go for Dallas. It might come down to the final game of the year where the Dallas Stars are playing for the division, or they are playing for home ice advantage for the entirety of the postseason in the Western Conference, or even they're playing for the President's Trophy. And like, I know that a lot of people look at the President's Trophy, they don't want it. You want home ice for as long as you can possibly have it in the postseason. The Dallas Stars are no exception to that. My guess is they are going to sell out for best record in the National Hockey League. They've been one of the best teams in the league all year. I think they want that feather in their cap. So if that happens, you look at the St. Louis Blues, their schedule, it's not easy down the stretch. Carolina, Seattle, Dallas. Frankly, for the panic playoff crowd, not ideal. The Golden Knights could clinch a playoff spot without having to win another game. I believe they are going to win another game. I don't think that they're going to back in. I think they're going to earn their way in by virtue of their victories in the final four games of the regular season. But everyone needs to take a breath when it comes to they're not going to make the playoffs. This team, I firmly believe, it's not a matter of if, it's when. It feels inevitable. You just want them to be playing the right way going into the postseason.
By the way, I don't want to steal your thunder. Mm-hmm. There's been an update in Toronto.
Wait on that. Let's get to it. Nope. I'm not letting you do it. We're going to take a break now. If you want to go see the Golden Knights and the Colorado Avalanche, that game we were talking about on Sunday, be caller number... Ooh, man, I want to tie in Austin Matthews in some way, but I can't. We'll just go with Cale Makar. Be caller number 8, 702-876-1340. That's the number. Caller number 8, you're a winner. One-timers, that's next.
Carlson left corner, centered, one-timer, score!
It's time for One-Timers. One-timers. A quick look at news and notes from around the National Hockey League. Brought to you by Paul Padilaw. It's not about the injury, it's about the recovery.
One-timers. Brought to you by Paul Padilaw. It's not about the injury, it's about the recovery. News and notes from around the National Hockey League. We start off, as we always do, and this is going to be really difficult for Chris Chapman and his impatience. We start off with clinching scenarios. One team can clinch a spot in the playoffs tonight. That's the Los Angeles Kings. They will clinch a playoff spot if they defeat the Calgary Flames in any fashion. So there it is. Pretty straightforward, simple. For LA tonight. Now, there is another clinching scenario. It doesn't have to do with playoff spots, but it does have to do with division titles. The Dallas Stars will clinch the Central if they beat the Winnipeg Jets in any fashion. And by virtue of a Dallas Stars victory, that would lock in Colorado and Winnipeg in round number one. Obviously, you look at this, the Winnipeg Jets, if they win tonight, would be tied in terms of points with Colorado. They're not giving up their dream for home ice advantage. Should be a very interesting and entertaining game. So those are the scenarios for the Central Division and for the Los Angeles Kings in terms of making the playoffs. Okay, we are going to revisit a really interesting and incredibly fun conversation. What's more difficult to do, 70 goals or 100 assists in a season? Christopher Chapman. Yeah, that's right. I used your full first name. We might see it happen on both sides of the ledger at the same time. And here's what I mean by that. Auston Matthews entered tonight's action against the New Jersey Devils with 66 goals on the year. Matthews has a 7-game goal streak going, in which he has scored 9 goals, that's including tonight. And now he has 2 goals on the evening and is 2 goals back from 70. He's got 68 goals so far this year. I said, just score 4 tonight, get it done, hit 70, and all is good. But then we go to the other side of the equation. It's not Connor McDavid, but Nikita Kucherov, who has 2 assists tonight for the Tampa Bay Lightning. Well, Tampa scored 2 goals. Of course, Kucherov has 2 assists. If not, he would have had a goal and an assist or 2 goals because he's everything to the Tampa Bay Lightning, but I digress. Nikita Kucherov sitting on 98 assists. Auston Matthews sitting on 68 goals. We might see, for the first time in decades, Chapman, not only a 100 assist season, but a 70 goal season, and it might be accomplished at the exact same time.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. By the way, for the record, if you're wondering, because I think we could be entering uncharted territory here when it comes to how tight this race for the Hart Trophy is. In 2001-2002, Jose Theodore won the Hart Trophy. However, he tied with Jerome Iginla with 434 points apiece. Jose Theodore won by garnering more first-place votes. We legitimately have four players who could win the Hart Trophy. Yeah. Only three of them will be on stage or at the award show because we know the finalists are the only ones invited. But I honestly could not tell you who wins the Hart Trophy. My gut tells me if Austin Matthews gets to 70, I feel like he's going to win it. But if Kucherov gets to 100 assists, how do you ignore that? If the Edmonton Oilers come back from the dead and win the Pacific Division, how do you ignore Connor McDavid? And Nathan MacKinnon, I think, unfortunately, he might be the guy who's left out in the cold, despite the fact that he's having an incredible season as well.
Okay. Here's the aspect of all of this that I find so incredibly funny. Back in 2014-15, Jamie Benn won the Art Ross. How many points did he have? Ooh. Do you know?
No, I don't know off the top of my head.
If you were to just take a guess at it, what would you say?
I'm going to say less than 100.
You're right there. Yep, less than 100. Jamie Benn won an Art Ross.
91?
Whoa, Chappie. Going high there.
High.
Jamie Benn won the Art Ross with 87 points.
No.
87 points. That was 11 years ago. 11 years ago. Austin Matthews almost has as many goals as Jamie Benn had points the year that he won the Art Ross.
Oh, my goodness.
Nikita Kucherov already has more assists than Jamie Benn had points the year that he won the Art Ross. This is not to drag Jamie Benn in any way. It is to highlight what is so clearly awesome about this league right now. We're in an age of offense. We are in an age in the National Hockey League where the talent of the forwards, the talent of the defensemen have caught up to the strides taken by goaltenders over the last however many years, and there's just too many good, skilled, offensive players in the game right now, and it's showing through in point totals, in goal totals, in assist totals. We are finally past the dead puck era and into a new age of offense in the National Hockey League.
And it's good. It's not good for you and me, but it's good to draw in new fans. Right? You've got this great deal with Turner and ESPN Plus where anybody in any part of the country could pretty much watch nearly any player they want to watch. Like, we didn't have that growing up unless you paid a ton of money. And when I was growing up, you got your regional team and that was it. But
yeah,
the idea now that you have legit marketable superstars, Austin Matthews, Nathan MacKinnon, Cale Makar. I mean, and now you have this offensive uptick to boot. I mean, there's no reason why the NHL, well, there is a reason why they won't, but they should take advantage of this. They should market. Mm-hmm. I want to see Austin Matthews doing national television commercials. Like, I want to see him doing SportsCenter commercials. I want to see him selling credit cards. I want to see the NHL capitalize on this because you have an opportunity here. We're in uncharted waters.
Sure.
With the amount of highly skilled players you have in this league at this given moment. And the crazy thing is the goalies are better than they've ever been.
I know. And yet here we are. Right? And to your point about marketability, there's two things that need to happen in that regard, right? Number one, you have to have players that are marketable. You have to have players that have personality. Like, Austin Matthews has it. Nikita Kucherov has it. I'd argue, no disrespect to Connor McDavid, he's not as marketable because I just don't know that the personality is quite there. Or it is there, but in similar ways to Sidney Crosby, because he's had to be a role model his entire life, it's sheltered, it's guarded a little bit. But you need the players to then feel comfortable being themselves. And that's the big aspect in all of this, right? Like, you want to talk about marketability, you need a perfect storm. You need a guy that can score goals or put up points. You need them to have personality. And then you need the National Hockey League, the players in the league, everyone pushing this product to be okay with them showing that personality. Like, Matthew Tkachuk works, not because he's the best player in the game. Matthew Tkachuk is crossing over in the Stanley Cup final to the NBA, not because he's the greatest player in the game right now, but because Matthew Tkachuk has a personality and he just doesn't care if you don't like it. He doesn't care if being himself ruffles feathers, because he's just that guy. He's authentically himself. And I think that in this regard, if Austin Matthews hits 70 goals, I'm with you. Get him on commercials. Have him be David Pastrnak in the penalty box with the Duncan commercial. Like, whatever you've got to do, get Austin Matthews in front of people. If Nikita Kucherov wins another Hart Trophy, get him in front of people. Let his personality shine. Let it show. But at the same time, if you're going to do that, if you're going to have players be ambassadors for the game in that way, don't get mad at them for being personable, for having a personality, for showing that. This is how you grow the game. And I think it's incredibly important for the Golden, for the National Hockey League, like you said, to kind of strike while the iron's hot right now, because the game is fun, it's entertaining, there's goals and interesting plays and Michigans and creativity, and we don't want to just beat that out of the game right now.
Yeah, get Austin Matthews on Jimmy Kimmel. Like, get these guys on.
Yeah.
Like, put them in places where they're going to be seen. Look, Austin Matthews is a really good personality. We've seen it. Jack Hughes, I mean, he's not in the discussion for this, but great personality. People pay to come see me.
Yeah.
Like, Trevor Zegras. Not a great year, but great personality.
But here's the thing. You just brought up Jack Hughes. People pay to see me. That was a meme after the fact. Every time the Devils would lose, it would be shoved back in his face. Even though on the surface, what he said is absolutely true.
I want a t-shirt that says "People pay to see me" with his picture
on it. Well, no, I know, but now it's being used for not for good, but for evil.
But it's,
he's getting trolled every single time he's in a visiting building.
Well, you know what? Then take advantage of that. Flip it.
Yeah.
Take ownership of it. Don't hide from it. Granted, he's on the shelf now, but don't hide from that. Don't let the trolls control the narrative. You got to get back out there and take control of the narrative, Jack.
Okay, one more thing I want to get to, and it's going to be part of a larger topic that we hit tomorrow. The NHLPA player poll came out earlier this week, and I just want to give some props to T-Mobile Arena. T-Mobile Arena was cited by the NHLPA, the Players Association, as the toughest place for a visiting team to play. So that's high marks for game day, the production staff, all of it, every single thing that goes into a Golden Knights home game. This is your shining moment. This is just another tip of the cap to the Golden Knights organization for creating a product that is just phenomenal. And also, T-Mobile Arena finished top five in this player poll for best ice in the National Hockey League. Three spots in Canada, Minnesota, and Vegas. So, again, it's just top-notch all the way around. Game day, production, ice staff, everybody. Phenomenal stuff all the way around for the Vegas Golden Knights organization. Those are your one-timers for today, Thursday, April 11th. If you want to see the Golden Knights take on the Colorado Avalanche on Sunday, be caller number 7. Caller number 7, 702-876-1340. Catching up with Chapman is next.
When the guy wouldn't stop talking, we had no choice but to give him his own segment. It's time for Catching Up with Chapman.
All right, Ryan. Well, as some people may know, that I am a huge, huge sumo wrestling fan. And we lost a legend yesterday, Akebono, who was the first foreign-born grand champion. Some people may know the name without being sumo wrestling fans, and they may know the name because he was American, born in Hawaii, one of the heaviest sumo wrestlers of all time. But he lost lost his life yesterday to heart failure. But as I mentioned, he's the first American Yokozuna, which is a grand sumo champion. There's only been about 70 of them in the history of sumo, a sport that goes back hundreds of years. So he was the first, not only American, but first foreign-born ever. So a legend in the sport, a legend for fans of American fans of the sport, and only 54 years old, which is way, way too young for anyone to lose their life. But Akebono passed away yesterday, so pretty sad day for sumo wrestling fans.
So I know I should know this, but how did you get into sumo?
The funny thing is, many, many years ago, like 2005,
there
was a tournament at Mandalay Bay, and the actual legit sumo company from Japan came over, and it was the first time they had ever held a tournament outside of Japan. Now, it was an exhibition. They were only here for a couple nights, but I went. And I said, this is incredible. Like, there's no weight limit. There's no weight classes like boxing or UFC. It's just whoever's better that day wins, regardless of size. And, you know, marrying a Japanese woman, it became a lot easier for me to follow. But, yeah, it's one of my favorite things. I love it.
That's awesome. VGK, Minnesota, tomorrow. We'll be out at T-Mobile Arena for that one. Have a great night, everybody.